Hello guys, how's it going? Welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the foreign service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and together with sound technician Walter Danesi, we'll be bringing you this show in English for Monday, March 17, 2025, with news, with sports, with the music. And today, March 17, as you will know, is St. Patrick's Day, and we're gonna be sharing some content related to the Irish in Argentina, both music and a very interesting interview. Also, it's a pretty sad anniversary for Argentina today, because 33 years ago, the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires was blasted in a terrorist attack that left 22 dead. And this was the first of two deadly attacks hitting the Argentine capital in the 1990s. 2 years later, in 1994, a much worse blast destroyed the seat, the head building of the Amia Jewish Community Center, killing 85 people. And well, the first of these two attacks happened on March 17, 1992. There are going to be memorials and commemorations taking place today. We're going to be reporting on that tomorrow. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com. You can also send a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way is okay for sending reception reports if you are at the EXA. This show is aired on the shortwaves of WRMI. The frequency is 5850 kHz, and you can also listen to us via internet on rae.com.ar or our app for mobile devices that you can download for free on for Apple or Android phones, okay? Let's get started now with the news. These are the headlines. Government increases police presence ahead of new pensioners' protest at Congress this Wednesday. United States extradites over 200 suspected gang members to El Salvador. Vatican says Pope Francis continues to improve. Brazil lowers import tariffs amid rising food prices. Canada's new Prime Minister says his country will never be a part of the United States. Sports: Boca thrashes Defensa y Justicia while the Avellaneda derby between Independiente and Racing ended in a 1-1 draw. And these are the news. The government is reinforcing police presence ahead of a new pensioners' protest scheduled for Wednesday. Security Minister Patricia Bullrich said that in addition to the 1,000 officers deployed last week, additional personnel will be on standby at strategic points. She defended the police response to the March 12 protest, which left over 100 people arrested and dozens injured, one of them critically. Meanwhile, several unions and social organizations have confirmed they will rally again on Wednesday. In addition to demands for better pensions for retirees, demonstrators will also protest last week's police crackdown. On Sunday, a gathering was held at Plaza de Mayo calling for justice for photographer Pablo Grillo. The reporter was hit in the head by a tear gas canister fired by police, and he remains in critical condition. Regarding the incident, Minister Bullrich stated that the projectile was fired according to protocol but deflected off a barricade before striking Grigio. Last Wednesday, thousands of people joined the pensioners' weekly march to Congress. The protests saw over 100 arrests, injuries and damage, including the burning of garbage containers and two police vehicles. Organized football-supported groups, or Barra Bravas as they are known in Argentina, joined the demonstration, with the government blaming them for the violence escalation. However, critics argued that infiltrators were responsible for chaos in an attempt to delegitimize the protest. The United States has deported over 200 alleged gang members to El Salvador. The detainees are believed to belong to the Venezuelan criminal organization known as Tren de Aragua. Salvador and President Nayib Bukele confirmed their arrival on social media. He stated that 238 individuals landed in the Central American nation and will now be held in a maximum security prison. They were expelled from the U.S. under an order by President Donald Trump, who invoked the 1798 Foreign Enemies Act, which hadn't been used since World War II. Bukele's government had previously offered to house deported criminals in Salvadoran prisons in exchange for a fee from Washington. The Vatican says Pope Francis remains stable and continues to recover. The pontiff has been hospitalized at Rome's Gemelli Clinic since February 14 due to respiratory issues. On Sunday, the Holy See released the first image of Francis since his hospitalization. The photo shows the Argentine Pope praying at an altar inside the medical center. In a Sunday Angelus message, delivered in writing this time, Francis said that he's facing a time of trial with a weakened body. Brazil is cutting import taxes amid rising food prices. The country's foreign trade chamber has approved a temporary suspension of tariffs on 9 products. These include beef, coffee, corn, and canned sardines. Authorities insist the tax exemption will be in place for a limited time. Vice President and Industry Minister Geraldo Alckmin acknowledged that the measure will cost the National Treasury about $110 million. Canada's new Prime Minister has again rejected Donald Trump's remarks about a possible U.S. annexation of the country. Upon taking office, Mark Carney stated that his nation will never, ever, under any circumstances, become a part of the U.S. His comments come in response to the American president, who has suggested that Canada could become the 51st state. Carney also confirmed that Canada will maintain tariffs on American products in response to Washington's trade actions. And now, sports. The Avellaneda derby between Independiente and Racing ended in a 1-1 draw in one of the most exciting matches of Argentina's 2025 league season so far. The clash, one of the country's most important football rivalries, was played at Independiente's stadium. The visitors took the lead with a goal from Uruguayan Gastón Martirena and had further chances to score before half-time. But in the second half, Independiente dominated and eventually equalized with a goal from Colombian Álvaro Angulo. With this result, Independiente remains at the top of the Group B of the League's Cup. Other results from match day number 9 were Aldo Civichu, he prevailed 2-0 over Argentinos Juniors. Godoy Cruz and San Lorenzo equalize with no goals. Deportivo Riestra and River Plate equalize with no goals either. Estudiantes de La Plata and Newell's equalize on one goal. Huracán defeated Independiente Rivadavia 2-0. Sarmiento and Talleres equalize with no goals. Boca destroyed Defensa y Justicia 4-0. Belgrano and Barraca Central equalize on one goal. And Lanús and Instituto ended with a victory for Lanús 4-1. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo. RAE. Argentine 面向世界。
Rai, Argentine vers le monde.
Rai, Argentina to the world.
Rai, 世界に向けて Argentine.
Rai, Argentina al mundo.
La Rai, Argentina al mundo.
Rai, Argentinian in the world.
Rai, Argentina al mundo.
Okay, folks, last week we commemorated the birth anniversary of Norberto, aka Papo Napolitano, who would have turned 75 last week. He passed away at the age of 55 back in 2005. And we are going to play more music by him. This is a track by one of the groups that he founded, Riff, which actually was a hard rock kind of heavy metal, more hard rock kind of group that emerged in the 1980s and disbanded at the beginning of the 1990s. This album in the early 1990s was kind of a reunion album for Riff. And the good thing about this is that this is a proper, straightforward, no bullshit rock and roll song. Like, okay, forget aboutthe fancy solos and the epic lyrics. Let's have a proper straightforward rock and roll song, and Papo knows how to play that genre like no other, demonstrating that in this song called Sube a mi guature, which is basically get in my car, but he is referring to a voiture, was like a chariot that he saw in the countryside. Great, great track in a classic of Argentine music.
Buscar y ella sin mirar subí a cualquier Mercedes Benz, subí a mi guature, subí a mi guature, subí a mi guature. Olvida los Mercedes Benz. ¿Quién se cree que está bien? Lo hace sin saber por qué. Subí a mi guature, subí a mi guature, subí a mi guature. No olvida los Mercedes Benz. Jerry, la pasará a buscar. Jerry, y él así dirá. Jerry, subí a cualquier Mercedes Benz, hey. Subí a mi guature, olvida los Mercedes Benz, hey. Ella lo mira bien, hey. Se cree que está bien, hey. Lo hace sin saber, hey. Subí a mi guature, olvida los Mercedes Benz.
And that's how you rock. That's basically what I, every time I play or listen to this song, that's what I think. This is how you do rock and roll music. Folks, today is March 17th, it's St. Patrick's Day. It's, as you may know, it's the national festivity for the Irish, which is a very moving community with a very big diaspora all over the world. And Argentina has got a quite important Irish community and connections to Ireland through many characters and through the presence of a significant, not massive compared to the Spanish or Italian communities, but significant and quite relevant Irish community here in Argentina. That was one of the first foreign communities to establish here in the very first years after the May Revolution, the very first years of Argentina as a country. And what we'd like to share with you on the occasion of St. Patrick in Argentina is an interview that was done by Channel History Now with author Patrick Speight, who wrote a book on the Irish community of Argentina entitled Irish-Argentine Identity in the Age of Political Challenge and Change, 1875 through 1983. He's interviewed, he was interviewed 3 years ago for this channel, History Now. The interview is available on YouTube. You can check it out, Patrick Speight, Argentine Irish Community. And we're gonna share it with you in its entirety now.
Hello, welcome to this week's History Now. Today I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Patrick Speight to the studio, who's going to be talking to us about his research and book on the Irish Argentines. Patrick, thanks very much for coming in to talk about your book. It's on the Irish in Argentina in part. Perhaps people are more familiar with, you know, the Irish diaspora. We automatically think of North America or Australia or things like that there. But there has been a significant population of people of Irish extraction in Argentina for quite some time.
That's correct, Barry. And it's probably a good point of departure, because one of the interesting aspects of the Irish community in Argentina, or the Irish diaspora in Argentina, is that they confronted a completely different social reality. Because the Irish who went to the English destinations like New York or Britain, New Zealand or Australia, confronted that historic antagonism. That antagonism is between Catholicism and Protestantism, the conflict between Ireland and Britain. That was apparent to them when they went to the United States, when they went to England. They were discriminated against. No Irish need apply, etc. But in Argentina, you had a Catholic population, a Catholic diaspora, moving into a Catholic nation. A Catholic nation which had a constitution which basically determined that the president must be a Catholic and that one of his duties must be the defense of the Catholic Church. So you would expect, for example, that the Irish who went to Argentina then would have an opportunity, having freed themselves from this historical antagonism between Catholicism and Protestantism, because there weren't many Protestants in Argentina. There was an English colony because Argentina was seen as part of the informal empire, the British Empire. So you did have an English colony there of business people. And when the Irish went there, there was no conflict whatsoever. No conflict whatsoever between the English and the Irish. Because the Irish became the workers for the British companies that established themselves there.
There are debates about when the Irish first landed in Argentina. Some I've looked at some things which say, you know, the 16th century. There's a very famous Father Field, who I know you're familiar with. So given that there is such a long-standing Irish, you know, not so much as a community, but Irish involvement in Argentina from that time to the time that your research covers, did this Irish community evolve over that time, or was it just, you know?
The Irish community did evolve. You're right, Father Field was perhaps the first Irishman to step foot on Argentine soil, and it's reputed that he's the first person to celebrate Mass in Argentina. But the Irish arrived in fits and starts, really, because they were part of the flight of the wild geese, their descendants. They arrived in Spain. They became part of the Spanish governance and part of the Spanish civil service. And so when the Spanish began to develop their interest in Argentina, the Irish came out with them. Mm-hmm. So a small community of Irish people were there.
Okay, and there's, of course, 19th century is a big, sort of a very important period for the Irish going to Argentina. We're more familiar with, you know, this vision of the Irish person fleeing famine, you know, in the mid-19th century. But the people who went to Argentina in the 19th century weren't necessarily those people escaping famine.
No, they weren't. I mean, many of them were entrepreneurs, business people who set out to make money. And Peter Sheridan was one of the first to start the sheep rearing industry and the saladeros, that's the meat salting industry there. And in a way, they were looking for labour, and they decided that the best labour was their own family and friends back in Ireland. And the connections were made, and families and individuals came out and took up positions in sheep farming.
Okay, and these people who were very much involved in the sheep farming and the industries attached to that, where did they come from in Ireland?
They mainly came from the Midlands, okay. And some came from Wexford. Yeah. But the majority of the Irish came out after the famine. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they were impacted adversely by the famine,
yeah.
Because to go to Argentina required money. And so they became part of what was referred to as a chain migration. They went there as an opportunity rather than being people who were fleeing oppression. And some of the Irish that I met when I was doing my research, and these would have been people in their 80s and 90s, were pained to say that they were not affected. Their families were not affected by the famine. They wanted to distance themselves from the famine. And one particular man, a father, Francisco Murray, he made it very clear, no, we came out as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. We were not fleeing Ireland, yeah. You know, when he was referring to his family roots. Mm-hmm. But the Irish did go out, and the key figure who helped mobilise the Irish and provided them with a kind of their endogenous kind of platform, as it were, I mean, because they became a community that simply lived amongst themselves, intermarried amongst themselves. That's why they were described as endogenous, was Father Fahey. Okay. And he came from Galway. Now, Father Fahey is a man who is idolized in the Irish Argentine community. They see him almost as a secular saint. But they don't take into consideration some of the other aspects of his life in Argentina. And one episode refers to Camilo O'Gorman. I'm not sure if you've heard of Camilo O'Gorman. Camilo O'Gorman was born into a well-established Irish Argentine family. She was 18 years old and fell in love with a Jesuit priest. They eloped. They moved to the north of Argentina. The very fact that they eloped caused consternation and shame within the Irish Argentine community. They felt that their community had been held up to ridicule. And so they moved north, and their idea was to go to Bolivia. But they needed to earn money to get there. So in the north, they established themselves as teachers in a little village. And they did so well, and they helped so many people, and the school was so successful that the mayor constantly wanted to do something to say, look, we want to give something back, so we'd like to organise a party for you or something. And they kept on saying, no, we don't want that. But on one occasion, they capitulated. They gave in and said, OK, we'll go and join you and have this party. And so they were getting all these accolades and stuff. And then in walked a priest called Father Gannon, Irish priests then were peripatetic. They moved around to provide ministry to the small Irish communities and stuff. And he spotted them, and he betrayed them.
Okay.
And he made it, when General Rosas and Father Fahey discovered that they'd been found, they decided that an exemplary measure had to be taken. Basically, they should be executed. They were brought back to a place called Santos Lugares, which is a small distance from Buenos Aires. And they discovered that Camila was pregnant, 8 months pregnant. And under the constitution, a woman who was pregnant could not be executed. So Rosas asked a Irish-Argentine lawyer, Sarsfield, to come up with some kind of legal rules that would allow them, theological legal rules that would allow them to execute this woman. And before they executed her and her lover, her partner, they gave her a glass of holy water so that her unborn child would be baptized and therefore would go to heaven. So that was an interesting story for me in how Irish Argentines, in a sense, related to the state. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't stand up for this woman. Yeah. They felt that their identity, their personal integrity, their sense of who they were as Catholic Irish had been compromised by this woman's extraordinary sin.
In terms of your research, you spent some time in Argentina. Could you tell us how long you spent there and what way you approached your research when you were out there?
Well, I spent 9 months there. And the focus of my research was to explore how Irish Argentines responded to the rise and fall of Perón, who became president between 1946 and 1955. He was overthrown in a coup d'etat in 1955. And then he returned to Argentina in 1973 and then died on the 1st of July, 1974. So my purpose of my research was to find out how they responded to his redistributive policies when he became president in 1946. And then to find out how they responded to the Dirty War, which took place between 1976 and 1983. It ended after the Falklands War. And that is a story in itself, because obviously you have to make contact with people in Argentina. You want to find people who would be the gatekeepers to the Irish-Argentine community, who would facilitate your entry into their homes to do interviews. And the first kind of big surprise was when I phoned up several people from my office at Queen's University. And I remember speaking to one Irish priest who got very concerned. He said, "Look, I don't mind introducing you to my Irish-Argentine parishioners, but I'm a bit nervous that you're going to talk to them about the Dirty War. Irish-Argentines don't like talking about the Dirty War. And furthermore, they don't like talking about a man called Rodolfo Walsh, a writer and investigative journalist who was murdered and disappeared by the Argentine state in 1976.
So a big part of this was you're conducting interviews, as you've said. Now, out of all the information, there's a very interesting sort of quirk, if you will, about Irish Argentines that I've heard from a number of sources, that they speak English with an Irish accent.
That's right. It surprised me as well. The first person I met, I think, when I arrived in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, was a writer called Juan José Delaney. He's a novelist, an academic, and he explores the aspect of porteño. That's the way in which the Irish used English and Spanish. And he explores that in all different, in all its dimensions. He also had an interest in Rodolfo Walsh. But when he sat down and he met me in a cafe, I found it hard to believe that he was Argentine, because he spoke in an accent that could be traced right back to Westmeath, where his family had originated in the 1860s and 1870s. And this particular quirk, as you called it, this particular characteristic, was something that was common to the Irish Argentine community who were of a certain age. So the older they were, the more pronounced their Irish accent was. And they reveled in that. I remember one particular character telling me how he arrived in Dublin Airport, and he was being questioned by passport control, and they couldn't believe he was Argentine. They said, "No, you're Irish, aren't you?" And he said, "No, I'm Argentine." And then another interesting little story about that was a priest called Father Bob Kilmeade. Now, he wasn't a priest then, he was a seminarian, and he happened to be travelling to London, and this was in 1976. And when he arrived, his English was so perfect, and he spoke with such a pronounced southern accent, that they arrested him because they thought he was an undercover IRA man, getting into the country on an Argentine passport. And he said, no, Argentine, I'm not Irish. And they held him in captivity for 24 hours before one of the Palatine priests in London came up to the airport and to search for him, and then discovered that he had been held because they were going to send him back to Argentina.
Yeah, that's an amazing quirk, as I say. Now, part of your research is very much focused on the newspaper of the Irish Argentines based in Buenos Aires, as the Southern Cross newspaper. Can you tell me how that informs your research?
Well, the Southern Cross was central to my research because I wanted to look at how Irish Argentines responded to different facets of the ups and downs of politics from 1875 right up to the Dirty War. Now, as you know, when you're doing a PhD, you have to do a historical backdrop. And my historical backdrop was looking at the Argentine community and how it responded to the First World War, how it responded to the Second World War, how it responded to the rise of fascism, how it responded to the rise of Hitler. All of that was part of my remit in order to build up a sense of how the Southern Cross operated within the Irish Argentine community. And what I found was was disappointing at one level, but it was the reality that a lot of the editorials and the correspondence to the newspapers were at times xenophobic. They were anti-English. They were anti-Semitic. They tended to see themselves as a people apart, as it were.
And just to clarify for our viewers, the Southern Cross newspaper was founded by an Irishman.
The Southern Cross newspaper was founded by Father Patrick Dillon in 1875. But it's important to point out that there was another newspaper called The Standard that was founded by two brothers, from the Mulhall brothers from Dublin. And their newspaper was founded in 1861 and became an international newspaper. It had stature, it had international cachet, but they were seen as pro-British and supporting the British Empire. And so they got a lot of buy-in from the very wealthy Irish Argentines, those who were millionaires, who made money on sheep and beef and other forms of agricultural farming, and they ploughed money into the Mulhall's newspaper, The Standard. Father Dillon also wrote for The Standard, and he was a very clever man. He became a priest very young. He was also a theologian. And when he arrived in Argentina, the Catholic hierarchy kind of spotted that he was somebody they could work with. And during the First Vatican Council, he was one of the perito, one of the experts that the Argentine Catholic hierarchy brought with them to Rome. And while he was in Rome, he would write back reports to the Standard. Why did he set up the Southern Cross? There's no archival information. There's nothing that says I'm setting up the Irish, the Southern Cross for this particular reason. But I have a feeling that having come back from the First Vatican Council and having realized that the Catholic Church was utterly opposed to any form of secularization and all the philosophies that were coming out of the Enlightenment and were beginning to affect and influence politics, and the very fact that Argentina eventually banned the teaching of the Catholic religion in schools in 1884, that he saw that coming, and he felt that the Irish community that was coming out were not warming to that, because the Irish community really, even though they were Catholic, And even though Argentina was a Catholic country, they wanted their own priests.
Okay.
They wanted their own priests. And they felt that their Catholicism was quite distinct from Argentine Catholicism. And I think in a way he wanted to secure that kind of community, that they would have a newspaper that gave them information about Ireland, but also information about the Catholic faith.
We've established here that the Southern Cross had this particular idea of Irish identity. There are plenty of people in Irish-Argentine history who didn't fit into that sense of identity, and I know you've dedicated part of your research to that. Probably the most well-known would probably be Che Guevara, but there's a lot of people in there who didn't feature in the Southern Cross. Can you tell us a bit about those people?
The historical marker for the conflict that that emerged in the late 1960s and 70s in Argentina with the Irish-Argentine community was the impact of the Second Vatican Council and the rise of liberation theology in Latin America. Because one of the confusing aspects of Peronism is that on the one hand, he was seen as almost a proto-fascist leader, but on the other, he had introduced social changes that benefited the workers. And when he was exiled, that belief that somehow or other Argentina could reform itself and there could be a redistribution of wealth and all the rest remained. And so when big conference of Latin American bishops took place in Medellin in Colombia in 1968 and the whole concept of liberation theology was developed, this impacted on a lot of Argentines, including Irish Argentines, who decided that the church and working with the poor was one way in which they could transform society. Unfortunately, the state didn't see it that way, and nor did the hierarchical church in Argentina. They were opposed to anything to do with liberation theology. So you had a church in, I mentioned the Holy Cross Church, which was kind of the cradle of the spiritual aspect of the Irish-Argentine community, run by the Passionists. They began to develop a theology of the poor. They began to go out and provide pastoral help to the poor. When you had when Pinochet was overthrown in Chile, they opened their doors to the exiles that were coming through on their way to Europe. The Irish Argentines, the traditional Irish Argentines, did not like that. And in fact, the first indication that the traditional Irish Argentines did not like what was going on was when, back in 1968, in October, Father Bernardo Hughes, at his Sunday Mass after Che Guevara was assassinated in Bolivia, he said, "I would like to us all to pray for the repose of the soul of Dr. Guevara." And half the church walked out. So you got a sense then that the community was not, the Irish-Argent community was not going to support this radical approach that was coming from the liberation theologians, because they associated it with communism, with what was happening in Cuba. And they were people who had, as a former presidential candidate told me, Ricardo López Murphy, that they had seen themselves as Irish people who worked hard, who had pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, who had made money, and they were not going to give that money away in social welfare handouts to people who didn't work. So to kind of segue into one of the most traumatic events in recent Irish-Argentine history, and that is the murder of priests and seminarians at the Palatine Church, St. Patrick's, in a very well-heeled neighbourhood of Belgrano. That happened in the 4th of July 1976. You had several priests there, Father Alfie Kelly, Father Alfie Layden, and then a priest of French extraction, Father Defoe. You had a number of seminarians, two of them Irish-Argentine, Jorge Kelly and Bob Kilmeade. And they had imbibed this new approach to theology, and they wanted to work with the poor. The problem was that they were in a church that was right in the middle of a very wealthy district which also included members of the armed forces. And when the dirty war started and the army began to raid people's houses, including picking up Irish Argentines like Lucia Cullen, for example, murdered and disappeared, Father Kelly spoke out because he discovered that when the army arrested people, they would go in and steal all their property and then sell it off in auctions. And when he discovered that some of his parishioners were taking advantage of that and buying the sequestrated property in auctions, he spoke out about it in one of his sermons. And then he was treated as a pariah. He was considered a communist. And then a petition began to go around the community asking people to sign it so that he could be removed from the community. The very fact that the seminarians were out working with the community rather than playing the traditional role of being seminarians and saying prayers all the time also upset the local community, because they thought there's something going on here. These people are too radical. And then on the 4th of July, 1976, the Navy forces, or the kind of the death squad attached to the Navy forces, arrived at the parochial house and murdered the three priests and the two seminarians. And what actually happened was that the Irish Argentines didn't want to admit that this was something that they should explore and find out what happened. What they wanted to believe was that Father Kelly was a leftist, that he was a radical, and that he brought it on himself and on the other priests who were murdered, that it was his fault, rather than basically the state deciding that it wanted to take out anybody that was opposed or in favour of socialism or in favour of the redistribution of wealth. They wanted to take them out.
Okay, and in terms of the Irish community as it is now, do you think that they're in a transition, you know, in terms of maybe integrating that much more than perhaps I have done in previous generations?
Well, the Irish government talks about 500,000. The majority of those people are Argentines. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I started my research, the concept Irish Argentine was in vogue, but now it's Argentine Irish because they can no longer sustain the notion. Most people are Argentine and they have an Irish background. But the remnant that I talked about, the older people who were very, very conservative, they're still there. And perhaps they will pass on those conservative values to a younger generation, who knows. But there is a section of the Argentine community that did not accept what was happening and did write letters in support of Father Fred Richards and did stand up to the vitriol that he received from other Argentines, Irish Argentines, who were opposed to what he was doing. And I mentioned earlier the role of the writer Rodolfo Walsh. Mm-hmm. Now, when I set out on my journey to explore the Irish in Argentina, I was told, don't raise the question of Rodolfo Walsh. Rodolfo Walsh came from an Irish Argentine family. When his father fell upon hard times, the family was split up. And he attended what was a school for the poor Irish called the Fahy, the Fahy School, after Father Fahy. And when he became a writer, he wrote stories which incensed the Irish Argentine community because he talked about the brutality that he experienced in that school. And they felt that they were being let down. But they also felt they were let down because he was a member of the Montoneros. Now, he didn't start off life as a lefty. He started off life in the 1940s to the right. He was opposed to Perón. He supported the overthrow of Perón in 1955. But he wrote this extraordinary book called Operation Massacre. And he wrote it because he was incensed to discover that the military junta that had overthrown Perón had murdered 12 or 15 men, and they claimed that they hadn't, that these people were executed under a legal guise, and he investigated that and discovered that they weren't, and he was persecuted for that book. Once he wrote that book and he realized it kind of was an epiphany for him, and then the Cuban Revolution happened and he went to Cuba and he developed a much more kind of fine attuned analysis of how capital and labor worked and how people were exploited and all the rest. And he came back to Argentina and eventually became part of the Montoneros. Yeah.
So, Patrick, it's a fascinating study of a lesser known element of the Irish diaspora. Can you tell us the title of the book and where people can get it?
I have a copy here. The Irish Argentine Identity in an Age of Political Challenge and Change, 1875 to 1983. And as I say, available in all good bookshops. It's published by Peter Lang.
Patrick, thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
RAI, Argentina al mundo. RAI, Argentina 面向世界.
RAI, Argentina vers le monde.
RAI, Argentina to the world.
RAI, 世界に向けて Argentina.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
RAI, Argentinian in the world.
RAI, Argentina al mundo.
And today, March 17, as you know, is St. Patrick's Day. That's why we play this very interesting interview with, I'm going to repeat his name, Patrick Spate, who wrote this book on the Irish-Argentine community. It's called Irish-Argentine Identity in the Age of Political Challenge and Change. Now we're going to play a tune related to Argentina, and it's a song by an Irish group called The Wolf Tones. The Wolf Tones wrote a book dedicated to one of the most notable Irish-Argentine people ever that wasn't mentioned, unfortunately, in the interview that we just shared. I'm talking about Guillermo Brown, or William Brown, the founder or the main hero of Argentina's Navy, who took part in the battles of independence in the early 19th century, and also fought for Argentina during a conflict with Brazil in the 1820s. A very big character, and the Wolf Tones dedicated a song to him that was released in 1982 in the middle of the Malvinas War, and for that reason, according to my research, the song was banned in the UK for a time during that year. So there it goes. On the occasion of St. Patrick, and in honor of the great Argentine-Irish community, let's play this track by the Wolf Tones called Admiral William Brown.
From my county, my old town, came a man of great renown. As a sailor and a soldier, was none bolder. He went to America at an early age, they say, as a cabin boy to sail the wide world over. Then adventure took him south to the De La Plata mouth. San Martin was on the route in Argentina. So three whaling ships he bought, and Brazil and Spain he fought, and freedom then he sought for Argentina.
Now Admiral William Brown, you're a man of courage shown, and in battles fought, the odds were all against you. But your Irish heart was strong, and in memory still lives on, and in Ireland there are some that don't forget you. On St. Patrick's Day it's told, you had many victories bold. You defeated all invaders, thugs and bullies.
Then through the pampas roamed, and you found a happy home. Lassies, lass, Malvinas, Argentina.
He had paired of Irish hands in a noble, gallant band that helped to free the land called Argentina. Had heard with great acclaim the Patricio's name and fame, when in 1806 the British came for slaughter. And to this very day in the Argentine they say the English ran away from Buenos Aires to the islands further down, and they took them for the crown. Las Islas Malvinas, Argentina.
We remember William Brown and his land of great renown, the invader of the islands from your country. When in 1833 we're by pirates forced to flee, and in Ireland sure we know the story fully. And the people that went to the Argentine knew to escape the English laws and wars and famine. They have proved a loyal crew, just like all the Irish do. Las Islas Malvinas, Argentina.
The old colonial days and the cruel English ways, with her thunder plunder we will teach the natives. For the Brits are gone to war, just like Whitelock did before, with her ships and guns and drums and flags and banners. In the empire days of old, when they murdered for the gold and paraded it around the streets of London. Oh, no human rights were given to the natives dead or living. Las Islas Malvinas, Argentina.
In the Argentine he died, Father Fahim by his side. 57 was the year his country mourned him. A hero of the nation, he's remembered with elation throughout the world where freedom still abounds. And the Southern Cross take note, where bold Willie Bulfin wrote, the Irish still support you, Argentina. With the empire tumbling down, let no paddies back the crown. Las Islas Malvinas, Argentina. With the empire tumbling down, let no paddies back the crown. Las Islas Malvinas, Argentina.
Okay, we're gonna do now very quickly the DX supplements of every week that is produced by Arnaldo Slain, beginning with the International Shortwave Service of India, also known as Akashvani, India's International Shortwave Service, now called Akashvani, formerly known as All India Radio, broadcast in Persian from Bangalore on frequency 15,280 kHz from 0315 to 0410 UTC time. Additionally, Akashvani from Bangalore has been reported in Burmese at 0412 UTC time on 15,410 kHz. Interesting services from the People's Republic of China. Three notable ones that we'd like to report on. Frequency 15,120 kHz. We've got China International Radio, CGTN, which broadcasts in English from Beijing between 0312 and 0320-22 UTC time. On 15,435 kHz, China Radio International, Radio Kitai, in Russian, can be heard at 0335 UTC time from Xi'an Xianyang, in parallel with 11,710 kHz from Urumqi. Lastly, on 15,540 kHz, China National Radio's China Business Radio transmits in Mandarin from Lingxi at approximately 0345 UTC time. Now, moving on to shortwave relation stations from the United States, we've got WTWW on 9930 kHz, broadcasting Christian programming aimed at North America that can be received from Lebanon at 2340 UTC time. WWCR is another station we are reporting on that can be picked up on 9980 kHz, also targeting the same region. It broadcasts in English from Nashville, Tennessee, and it was heard at around 2147 UTC time. Now, shortwave stations in Brazil. This comes from our DXing friend Rudolf W. Grimm, who reports the following active stations coming out of São Paulo in Brazil. These are AM stations, not shortwave ones. On 560 kHz, Radio Guardia da Noticia, 700 kHz, Nossa Radio, 740, Radio Trianon, 780, Radio Canção Nova, 920 kHz, Sistema São Paulo de Comunicações, on 1000 kHz, Radio Record, on 1040, Radio Capital, on 1070 kHz, Radio Metropolitana, on 11,150 kHz, Super Radio, on 1200, Radio Cultura Brasil, on 1230, Radio Atual, after a few weeks of the air, it returned to the medium waves, this last one, Radio Atual. Then on 1260, on 1260 kHz, we've got Radio Super, Radio Boa Vontade. On 1330 kHz, Radio Iguatemi. On 1450, Radio Boa Nova. On 1490, Radio Inaculada Conceição. On 1570 kHz, Radio ABC. And finally, we are mentioning on 1600, Radio 9 de Julho, Radio July the 9th. And with this list of Brazilian AM broadcasters, we are wrapping up this week's edition of the DX Supplement of RAE, produced by Arnaldo Slain, Kind 73s. Let's go over the headlines again before signing off. The government increases police presence ahead of new pensioners' protests at Congress. The United States extradites over 200 suspected gang members to El Salvador. The Vatican says Pope Francis continues to improve. Brazil lowers import tariffs amid rising food prices. Canada's new prime minister says his country will never be part of the US. Sports: Boca thrashes Defensa y Justicia, while the Avellaneda derby between Racing and Independiente ended in a 1-1 draw. And with that, we come to the end of this week's today's edition of RAE in English. This week's edition of the DX Supplement, that's what I meant. This show was operated by sound technician Walter Danesi and hosted by yours truly, Fernando Farias. Hope you enjoyed it. Join us tomorrow for a new program of RAE in English. Ciao, hasta mañana.